Hi, it's Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. The title of this interview is called, Are Our Bodies Really Contaminated with Mercury, Lead, and Flame Retardant? Here's How to Detox. Dr. Dietrich Klinghardt, well known for treating chronic pain and neurological disorders with integrative medicine, says toxins are everywhere. In fact, mercury is so commonly found, Dr. Klinghardt says, there's not a river, stream, or system that doesn't have abnormal levels of it. It even falls down in the rain. It's everywhere. But it's not the only toxin you have to worry about. The average bone content of lead in humans is 400 to 1,000 times higher than it was 200 years ago. Then there's the flame retardants that's in there too. Dr. Klinghardt says we're constantly ingesting a cocktail of heavy metals and biotoxins that can lead to fibromyalgia, joint pain, neurological disorders, hair loss, heart problems, poor eyesight, fatigue, and much, much more. And in this audio interview, you'll hear all about the toxins that are in our environment, how to figure out and minimize the levels of your exposure, and the best ways to detox from it all. You'll also hear the one most cost-effective way to start detoxing today. You'll hear the surprising study that shows a possible link to toxins and mothers who gave birth to autistic children. You'll hear the scary reasons why toxins don't usually show up on any doctor's test and the only way to know for sure what your levels are. You'll hear the three different forms of mercury and what they can do to the body. You'll hear about debunking the myths that one toxin causes one set of symptoms and the different approaches to views that alternative medicines take. You'll hear three spices you'll probably have in your cupboard right now that aid the body the quickest when it comes to detoxification and how to use them to do that. The good news is, if you get rid of mercury, most toxins will follow, and Dr. Klinghardt considers detoxing a critical step in the healing process because it can bring both the brain and body back to optimal health. So in this interview with him, you'll hear all about the amazing things that can happen when you get rid of toxins from your body, along with the detox protocol that will get you there. Now let's get going.
Hi, this is Chris Costello, and I've teamed up with Michael Senoff to bring you the world's best health-related interviews. So if you know anyone struggling with their weight, with cancer, diabetes, ADHD, autism, heart disease, or other health issues, send them over to Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. Today we are talking with Dr. Dietrich Klinghardt. Dr. Klinghardt, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
One thing I'd like to ask you about today is a lot of people are talking about toxins in the environment, and you've done a tremendous amount of research and study and teaching on this. What are some of the most toxic elements that we have in our environment right now?
You know, first of all, there is basically two categories of toxins. There's the water-soluble toxins and there's the fat-soluble toxins. And then amongst each of these, there's two subgroups. There's the positively charged ones and the negatively charged ones. And so for me, after all these years of looking at toxicity and how to get stuff out of people, it still appears to me that the key culprit in most people, the key element, if we manage to remove that, most other toxins start to tumble out of the system without much effort. And that is still mercury in its different forms. You know, mercury exists in principally three different forms. You know, there is metallic mercury, and then there is mercury that has lost one electron, that's the mercury salts, and then the mercury that lost two electrons, which is both ethyl and methyl mercury, which are the most toxic forms of it. So, you know, it's like the keystone and an arch. Like when you remove that, the whole thing tumbles, the ecosystem in us of toxins.
Are we being exposed, this current generation, more than, let's say, in past generations?
Yeah. You know, mercury is now found in songbirds, it's found in rats, it's found in squirrels, it's found in deer. When there's a forest fire, huge amounts of mercury are released from the needles of the pine trees when they're burning, with people getting seriously ill downwind. We used to talk 20 years ago about acid rain. Now we talk about toxic rain, you know, that mercury falls from the sky with the rain because it has entered every system on the planet. There's not a single stream that don't have abnormal levels of mercury in them. So things have gone pretty far. So that's just one aspect I wanted to highlight in the beginning, because there's like a certain mercury fatigue. People have talked about mercury for so long that nobody wants to hear it anymore. Isn't there any other more interesting toxins out there? And then this is the first layer. Past that, I still stay with the metals. My next chief culprit is lead. You know, from the time when gasoline was leaded, it has been blown into the air and rained down on farm fields and entered the drinking water. And there's many, many patients that I have that were never exposed knowingly to lead in any form or shape, and yet they're severely lead toxic. We know that the average bone content of lead is now 400 to 1,000 times higher than it was 200 years ago. That's anthropological research that is important to notice. And these are people that are not welders or professionally people exposed to it. The reason people muddle these two metals up with each other, when you look at research and when you look at opinions and practical ways of getting people detoxed, is that both metals are so-called sulfhydryl affinitive metals. That means they're both oxidized with sulfur, and they are extracted from the body by using different compounds of sulfur. And so there's no way to extract mercury without at the same time extracting lead. There's no way of extracting lead or chelating lead or complexing lead without getting out the mercury. So it's good to mention those two metals in one wash up because they follow the same basic principles.
And you've worked with thousands of people and tried to get them healthier. And what kind of conditions do you see people that are suffering from this kind of toxic overload? What kind of conditions do you see that they have?
Yeah, I think the most important thing to know for the listeners is there is now many different approaches to medicine. There's the traditional medical approach where you try to make a diagnosis, where the idea is that one microbe causes one illness, or one event causes one genetic flaw causes one illness, or one event causes one illness. That's the old way of thinking about medicine. And then in alternative medicine, there is principally three or four approaches. There is people in the 80s, we had a number of alternative physicians look through the glasses of Candida. Like every patient who had any form of chronic illness, whether it was chronic pain, headaches, fatigue, fibromyalgia, whatever it was, insomnia, it was Candida. They looked at it through those glasses, and then with the diet and treatments that resulted, there were good improvements in a number of people, but not ultimately, it wasn't satisfying. And the 90s came, everybody had the herpes viruses, Epstein-Barr, herpes type 6, and a lot of people started looking through those glasses and tried to bring antiviral strategies on board to see if people would get well. Well, they had some success, and some of the people also still stuck to the Candida thing and did both and probably had better successes than people doing just one of them. Then 2000 came, and with 2000 came the broad arrival of Lyme disease, and suddenly everybody looked through the glasses of everybody had Lyme disease, and people were treated accordingly with antimicrobials. That's another approach that has emerged in alternative medicine. And then, you know, of course, all along there have been people like Jeffrey Blunt or Jonathan Wright that linked pretty much every condition ultimately to a nutritional defect, you know, that you needed to increase your vitamin intake for certain things and that you corrected every illness that way by looking through a functional medicine approach on those glasses, by finding out which metabolic pathway was disturbed and which vitamins could be given to turn that on and improve the biochemistry. Now, I looked from the late 70s and to my own fate, my own illness, my own suffering, I discovered that what was the most important step in my healing was to radically detox heavy metals from my system, and that brought my brain back and brought my health back. And so I started looking at every chronically ill patient through those glasses. And early on in the treatment of chronic illness, I placed the diagnosis and treatment of heavy metal toxicity as an early intervention, and really pretty much proved to myself, to my patients, and also to other co-fellow travelers on this path, that it was a very, very good strategy to start any treatment for chronic illness with a solid few months or even a few years of detoxification. And then on top of that, sort of like the icing on the cake, put the treatment for Lyme disease, for the viruses, for the mold, for the yeast, for the genetic abnormalities, and so forth.
And that's an interesting point that you bring up, that for each illness, people do tend to look through their own glasses at what's going on. But your take is that the most important is to deal with the toxic overload first. Is that right?
Yeah, but I like to sort of modify that a little bit. You know, like I said in the beginning, that mercury probably is the kingpin in the whole toxic accumulation that we have in the body. However, in the last 20 years, things have significantly changed, or other factors have come in. We know that we have the exposures of PBDEs, flame retardants. We have exposure to estrogens, to estrogenic mimics in the chemistry, and that our fatty tissues, the brain, the nervous system, and the fat is continuously accumulating more and more of these carbon-based toxins, which ultimately appear to be very involved in breast cancer and prostate cancer, are very intimately involved with a number of neurological diseases. However, to clarify what I said before, in order to get the carbon-based petrochemicals and drug residues out of the system, it is still the most meaningful approach to start with the mercury, to put however little or much mercury is in the system, to focus the attention initially there, and then add the strategies in to get the petrochemicals out, the sauna therapy, the chlorella, the glycine. You know, there's a number of strategies that have evolved to deal with the other things. However, the mercury should be first. And then last thing I want to say at this point, that about half the toxins that are volume-wise, amount-wise, you know, if you could weigh them in a scale, half the amount of toxins that we have in our body are not the ones that came into our body from the outside, but are created on the inside by the so-called microbiome, by the microbes that live in us, that also feel increasingly under attack by the toxins and by the exposure to the electromagnetic fields that we're now exposed to. The microbes in us feel under attack. And the mold is multiplying much faster than it did. The Lyme spirochete are growing much faster than they used to do. The mycoplasma is growing faster. The chlamydia pneumonia is growing faster. And they're all biotoxin-producing microbes. And so what you end up with in a contaminated system, let's say there's a little bit of mercury, a little bit of flame retardants, a little bit of food preservatives in the system, now the microbes that are naturally present in us become virulent, and they start adding to this pool of toxins their own flavor. You know, we know that Candida alone produces several hundred of well-known and classified mycotoxins. And then there's, of course, a whole host of other molds and yeasts in us that produce toxins. Lyme disease is known now to create the BB toxin, as it's often referred to. Babesia is causing its own toxins. And these things all accumulate in us, and they all need to be eliminated through the common so-called biotoxin pathway. I mean, they all use the same enzymes. The body has to use the same systems to throw them all out. And those pathways get increasingly congested and backed up. And depending on our genetics and on the total body burden that we carry, the illnesses that result from this look very differently in different people. Yet the approach to succeed in getting these things under control, for me, still starts with the mercury. And then I take it from there, addressing other toxins, addressing the microbes, the biotoxin-producing microbes, minimizing exposures, and so forth.
For more interviews with the world's top health and medical experts, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com. And you've got a lot of great information on your website, the KlingHeartAcademy.com. And people can also, if they want to get in touch with you, they can email you at info@KlingHeartAcademy.com. I'm going to spell that. That's KlingHeartDT. Academy.com. And the other thing that I was quite interested in is you have a lot of good information on the internet on the Klinghart detox protocol. What really interested me was that a lot of these things are very commonly found. I mean, you mentioned cilantro, and I'd like you to expand upon that a little bit for our listeners.
In order to eliminate toxins, now and historically, you know, the couple of 100,000 years that us humans have been around, we've, of course, had to develop in our organism successful methods to eliminate toxins, because things weren't always good. You know, the people lived close to areas where volcanoes erupted, where the earth was naturally full and contaminated of lead, mercury, cadmium, nickel, thorium, uranium, and so forth. And humans had to develop enzyme systems and detoxification organs to eliminate those things. So we have the basic machinery in place. And the wonderful thing is that plants have also been around for very long, much longer than we are. Yeah, probably about 3 billion years, the planet, and we don't know exactly how long life has been here, probably about 600 million years. And anything that lives had to develop strategies to deal with the basic elements that are on the planet, including mercury and lead, nickel and cadmium and other petrochemically based toxins. And so when we look in plant life, what plants are doing to keep themselves alive and toxin-free, different plants have developed different strategies, and some of these can be transferred to humans by eating the plant. And so I took a very careful and long look at what's published in the biological literature and found very, very good hints of what plants can be successfully used for detoxification. So for me, it always starts with the algae chlorella. I've been ridiculed for that one and poo-pooed, but chlorella happens to be the plant that probably has the highest number of peer-reviewed scientific articles written about it to detoxify biological systems. And a recent study confirmed what we've been using it for 20 years, that is very effective in eliminating methylmercury, I mentioned at the beginning, from the body. And methylmercury is the most toxic of the known elements or really molecules. And there is not a single medical drug that is known to be very effective for methylmercury. But chlorella, very good study made in Japan, shows that it's very effective in eliminating methylmercury from the body. Coriander or cilantro, the journals of the nuclear industry, shown that cilantro is very, very effective in eliminating from the body radioactive mercury. And this is, again, methylmercury and ethylmercury in its different forms. So those two are naturally my favorites. Recently in the literature is also mentioned curcumin, the extract of turmeric, being very effective in turning on our detoxification systems, not just for toxic metals, not just specifically for mercury, but really across the board for many different toxins. So I would say those three are the top of the list. There's many other herbs and plants that are shown in the literature to have detox capabilities. You know, the good one, for example, is also dandelion, which turns on the bile flow in the liver, which is a very, very helpful step in detoxification. And then there is, of course, non-plant-based other materials. There's volcanic ashes like zeolite that have become popular recently. There is clay from the earth, which is an excellent toxin binder in the gut. There is the ingestion of manganese, high levels of manganese, which has been shown to protect us against the Shiga toxin. We had recently in Germany a big outbreak of a very lethal form of E. coli, and as it was shown by the genetic cracking of the code, that E. coli was actually a recombination of 20% of the Shigella genome and 80% was the E. coli genome, and the Shigella genome that was incorporated had the ability to produce the Shigella toxin, abbreviated called Shiga toxin, which was responsible for the nephrotoxicity and the lethal, vicious virulence of this bug. And it was shown, you know, when people have a reasonable intake of manganese every day, it takes 4,000 times the amount of Shiga toxin to have any adverse effect in the system. So the simple example, you know, manganese, who would have thought that manganese could be used to protect ourselves from biotoxins? And, you know, I could go on for hours, but these are sort of like some of the top of the list of the natural things that we use to turn on the detox pathways in people.
So how do people recognize symptoms? What kind of things are they going to experience if they are having heavy metal toxicity, and what kind of conditions are they possibly looking at?
One myth I want to destroy right in the beginning is the myth that one toxin causes one set of symptoms. That still, when you read through the toxicology books, you read lead toxicity and it looks very different from mercury toxicity. And then you read the toxicity from certain types of candida or mold looking very different from other types of toxicity, and that is simply not true. All the toxins have to be eliminated through the same detox pathways, and most of the symptoms are simply caused by the overflowing of these pathways. And I capacity is, number one is insomnia, number two is daytime fatigue or lack of zest, as I prefer to say, is fibromyalgia type body pain, just discomfort in the body. Those are the top three. And whether you make somebody toxic with lead or with flame retardants because they're sleeping on a new nice mattress that hasn't outgassed yet, or they're working in a car garage and exposed to vapors of benzene and toluene and everything that's in the gasoline, people will present with the same exact symptoms. The symptoms depend more on their genetics and their preload, whatever they're bringing in. By the time of the last exposure, that shapes and shades the symptoms. So what I'm really trying to say is that symptoms are a very, very poor guide in directing you towards the right diagnosis. What is helpful is to assume that anybody presents that is chronic or chronically recurring could be caused or attributed to by a particular toxin or a toxic ecosystem. And that includes really everything that you know, poor eyesight, tinnitus, hair loss, skin problems, gut problems, heart problems, problems of the circulation, muscle problems, hormonal problems, chronic bladder problems, joint problems, nerve problems. It really is the cocktail of biotoxins and heavy metals and other environmental toxins. The mix against the backdrop of your own genetics and against the backdrop of your current nutrition and exercise and psychological and social environment that shades the symptoms and makes you the way you are with your imperfections. And because of that, it is good to have a structure with approaching the patient. In our current medical legal environment, it's good to come up with a tentative diagnosis based on some lab work. And it's pretty easy with an appropriate challenge test to demonstrate that the patient has some heavy metal toxicity. You use the hair analysis or a provocation test where the urine usually is measured, or looking in the stool, or doing a red cell blood analysis, or doing a urine porphyrin test. There's so many different tests available, and if you really want to prove it to somebody, you treat them for a few days or for a few weeks with a number of different metal mobilizing agents, and then collect different fluids from different body compartments. And then you will see that there is significant amounts of things in there that shouldn't be in there, that then lays the foundation to establish a long-term protocol. Every study that's ever been looked at, there was never anybody found in the last 20 years who was not lead and mercury toxic. Nobody was ever found that didn't have flame retardants in the system, and so on and so forth. Nobody was ever found to not have some mold mycotoxins in them. And so, you know, if you want to open up to this, it is intelligent and wise and very cost-effective and very economical for the patient to start there and then start focusing in on individual symptoms and see how they can be supported, maybe with a vitamin protocol or the medical drug.
This is Chris Costello reporting for Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. And Dr. Klinghart, where do people find these kind of doctors? My own physician recently told me I have the best numbers she'd ever seen, and that was blood test only. Unfortunately, I still felt terrible. So how do people find the right practitioners that can help them if they are having chronic illness?
There's really two things in your question or your comment. One is the toxins that make people ill are the ones that are deep inside the brain, they're deep inside the cells of the immune system, they're in your bone marrow, and they are not in your blood, they are not in your urine, and they are not in your poop. And so if you have a practitioner who does a blood test and say you look great, or does a urine test and says you look great, you're not with the right practitioner. So the only way that you can demonstrate that somebody is toxic is that you first have to assume they're toxic and treat them for a while, where you give substances that are able to mobilize a good amount of the toxins from the bone marrow, from the brain, from the cells of the immune system. And then you look in the excreted body fluids or in the blood to see if you did in fact mobilize something. And the only patient that I've ever seen that is really finished with detoxification is the patient who feels good and who, with the appropriate provocation of toxins, doesn't bring out any toxins. If a patient feels miserable and does not bring out any toxins in the urine or in the blood or in the poop, the patient is so sick that they cannot mobilize the toxins that are in the cells, even with these agents that are given to them, and those are often the sickest people. I don't want to make a diagnosis over the phone, which I'm not known to be that accurate with, but I would dare to say that the physician you've worked with has not looked deep enough and probably is well-meaning and probably did a reasonable job, but probably has not looked deep enough. So where do you find people that do this? Well, I think a reasonable place to start is a group that I personally like is ACAM, the American College of Advancement of Medicine. They have their home base, I think, in Laguna Hills in California. Most of the people that use this EDTA chelation now also have a high level of awareness of using DMPS, DMSA, D-penicillamine, the other strong detox agents. And people that have been in the field long enough have realized that none of the medical compounds really ultimately are enough to detoxify a biological system, that you need to bring in biological tools, plant extracts, minerals, vitamins, to push out the last holding on toxin. So I think this, other than the people that I've trained personally, and there is now different groups in the U.S. that I actually don't know that also teach detoxification. I know there's a lot of nutritionists, there's chiropractic groups. They all have their place. They all have their method. There is sauna therapy. There is certain electronic and laser-based instruments that can push out toxins to a degree. But, you know, if I had my choice, I go to people that were trained by myself. And I don't want to poo-poo anybody. I incorporated from many different disciplines, many different methods. They all have their place. And when you really, really understand toxicity, you know that this is a lifelong process. It's not something you do for a few weeks or a few months and then you're done. You know, just like you don't do your exercise, you know, okay, well, I want to be healthy, so I exercise now for 3 months and then I'm going to be done. Or, yes, I eat a good diet for 3 months and then can I go back then to eat my fried food? It's the same idea. Detoxification in today's environment has to be for life. And if anything is for life, it cannot be based on medical drugs, because eventually the side effects of the medical drugs are going to catch up with you. It has to be nutritionally based, and I think we're way ahead of the game with that one.
And so if people want to find the Mercedes of detox practitioners, they can go to KlingHeartAcademy.com, and do you have them listed on there?
You know, because of the political environment, we are very cautious about listing anybody, but there is like an inner referral system. Once you enter and find somebody in the system, they know everybody else. And there is an internal referral system. It's more like an oral tradition. Then there is a referral list, but it's not complete and it may not give you enough information. But once you enter the system, there is a dialogue that we have with each other. There is a common level of knowledge. There are some of us that do not want to be seen. There are some of us that do want to be seen. So it's not difficult to find help.
You mentioned another thing there called preconception health, and that was really interesting. There was a sentence, something to the effect of emotional attachments in the DNA from ancestry.
Yeah,
that's a real mind blower.
Well, not really. Let me expand on that a little bit. I did a small study that unfortunately I was not able to find a publisher interested, where we measured the exposures to electromagnetic fields in pregnant mothers and could predict based on the measurements which mother would give birth of a child that would be neurologically disturbed versus the mother that would give birth to a healthy child or a child that would go on to for healthy development. And unfortunately, I was right that we could predict that the more exposure that the fetus had in the mother's womb to ambient electromagnetic fields and microwave exposure from the ambient cell phone broadcasting, the higher the exposures, the higher the chance was that the mother would give birth to an autistic child. And the numbers of autism are roughly doubling every 5 years. I realized there was an emergency burning. I want to get the word out that the real healthcare has to start before we conceive a child. We have to know, okay, we want to have a child. What are the dangers during the pregnancy? What are the things that we have to get done before we ever conceive? prepare, like ideally the mother should be reasonably detoxified before she gets pregnant. We want to make the diagnosis of active viruses, Lyme disease, mycoplasma, mold exposures before the mother gets pregnant. And there are very simple tests, very simple ways of doing that, and then very simple steps and prophylactic treatments. And then the pregnancy goes smooth, goes beautiful. There's no complications. The babies come out beautiful. They're gorgeous. They're big. They're healthy. They're intelligent. And this is information I wanted to pass on for a long time. The time has come. I feel it's almost an emergency that we make that information available. And of course, you know, when we know how to create a really healthy mother that gives birth to a healthy child, of course, if you do a fraction of that to the adult will stay healthy. And so, you know, we look at the different factors, you know, the electromagnetic stresses, what to do about that. It's very simple, very, very clear. The science is on our side. We teach how to biologically treat the chronic infections that people have now and so forth. And the thing that you're referring to is that we know when a fetus is traumatized in the womb, that leads to methylation defects, a famous methylation block, you know, that we treat now with methyl B12 and folinic acid and these things. That's often the outcome of a disturbance that happens during the pregnancy. Unfortunately, once a methylation block is set, that is passed on to the offspring. When these children grow up and have children, that methylation block is passed on for several generations outside the DNA and the epigenome. And that's a very, very new area in medicine where we look at changes in the epigenome that are induced by psychological or physical trauma very often during the pregnancy or in young childhood. So we go into that and show the literature, the proof, and also show what to do about that.
That is just incredible, and it sounds like we've just touched on the tip of the iceberg here. And Dr. Klinghart, we just want to thank you again for joining us today.
It was a pleasure. Yeah, thank you.
That's the end of our interview, and I hope you found it helpful. For more great interviews on health, marketing, and business, go to Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.